Sonny, good to see you. Hogan's not going to be with us today, but, you know, we can, the show can still go on. Scheduling is tough sometimes.
Yes, me and you are going to hold it down for the team today.
Yeah, it's going to be fine. And first thing I would say is, if you're watching or listening, please click subscribe, follow, and like, and do all the things and make sure that you get alerted when a new episode pops, which we send out every single week, and really, really very much appreciate that. And something else, Sonny, we're going to get into this a little bit, if you don't mind. I'd like to talk about the fact that it's kind of a big deal for me this week. This was launch week or publication week for my book, my first book. I'm tempted to say my new book.
Oh,
but that implies, but there have been others. There haven't. But so this week has been book release week. Very exciting.
Sorry.
Yes. That's all right. Were you checking?
I just said
checking out your makeup or something. What were you doing?
No, I was reading a text. Yes, I'm so excited for you for your book publication week. I was going to try to run into the other room here because my mom got the book and I was going to get it and show it, but that cross my mind until later. Good. You are prepared.
There it is. Swing Hard, In Case You Hit It, My Escape from Addiction and Shot at Redemption on the Trump Campaign. And we'll talk about that and some other stuff, including what's going on in the presidential campaign. Because what else would we do? Because this is the Line Drive Podcast. So thank you for indulging me here to talk about a little bit about this. On Tuesday, April 2nd, this came out. Again, as I just mentioned, Swing Hard, In Case You Hit It. It's my first book, and it's about two things, really. It's about my life in politics, and a lot of that, things that would be interesting to a reader would be surrounding the 2020 Trump campaign, which is where you and I met. Mm-hmm. And the other half of the book is my decades-long struggle to fight alcoholism, and that's a battle that I finally won in 2015, and I wrote a book about it. And the purpose of this is, like, I've talked to you about this a little bit since the book came out, but maybe the listeners don't know. For decades, I had a pretty severe drinking problem, when I was in rehab a number of times, I went 5 times to rehab, inpatient and once outpatient. Yeah. So 6 times total. And every time I was in there, I spent a lot of time in the bookstore, and they had, you know, like medical type journals and more clinical things, which explained the biology of addiction, whether it's alcohol or drugs or whatever. But they also had a bunch of things that were either biographies or autobiographies, which told the stories of people. And I like the autobiographies because it was people, in their own words, talking about their own struggles and their own stories and how they made it through. And I identified with a lot of the things that were in a lot of those books, not every bit of it, but you can identify with the struggle. Everybody has a different path and all that. And those books really helped me out a lot. And so I thought that I would want to write one of those. And so that's what I set out doing. And I figure that, if somebody picks up this book and for 10 minutes flips through it and reads a few words or half a chapter or whatever, and they don't pick up a drink in those 10 minutes, then it was worth writing the book. And so that's why I wrote it. And I'm pleased to be able to be on the other side of that. I know it could go south at any second, but for now, I feel pretty good about it, and I'm happy about it. So thanks for letting me talk.
Yes, I know I tweeted this the other day, but I am extremely proud of you for this because I know you're probably going to play your clip from Fox and Friends the other day, but you mentioned in the clip how there were some people coming after you on the campaign trying to use this against you and really like weaponizing your past to try to tear you down. And when you said, like, you know, this is your story, if you get ahead of it and tell it, then it takes all the ammo away from them. And me and my mom were actually talking about that the other day because I was like, oh my gosh, I turned on Fox and Friends and I see the cover of his book is on there. And I was like, I mean, we text all the time. I was like, you couldn't tell us.
Oh, did I not tell you that I was going to be on there?
No, I didn't know.
Oh, well, you know, I didn't want to talk about it a lot because you never know. You know how those things go.
Yeah.
You're involved in this business and you put people on these shows all the time and sometimes they get canceled, right? You get bumped
for one thing
or another. You never, you know, my hit was originally scheduled to be 6:20 a.m. and then they moved it to 8:30. Let me play the clip here.
This
is the, This is my appearance on Fox and Friends. And Brian Kilmeade is such a great guy. He's the one who did the interview. And I've been knowing Brian since, well, I met him first during the, when I worked for Sonny Perdue at USDA during the Trump administration. We were somewhere and Brian Kilmeade was there. So that's the first time I talked to him. But in 2020, I got to know him a little bit better. I wouldn't say they were pals, but you know, we know each other a little bit. And he's a really good guy. And he did a solid here for me. Here's this.
Book, Swing Hard in Case You Hit It. And it's a little about politics, a lot about your addiction. You said in 4 years, you went from being threatened with prison to riding on Air Force One. How did you break the addiction to alcohol?
Well, I woke up in jail, and then less than 4 years later, I was flying on Air Force One with President Trump. And this is not a tell-all book like a lot of the books in the Trump era. Being the communications director for President Trump's 2020 campaign was the highlight of my professional career. This is about two things, politics, but also my decades-long struggle with alcohol. And the way I was finally able to kick it, and it's coming up on May 16th, 2015 was the day that I took my last drink. It's coming up on 9 years since I took my last drink. I wrote this book because when I was in rehab, and I went multiple times, I spent a lot of time in the bookstores there reading books by people who were telling their own stories about how they made it through. And I wanted to write a book like that because they helped me. And if someone picks up this book and can spend 10 minutes just flipping through it, and in that 10 minutes, they don't pick up a drink, then it was worth writing. I have two little boys, ages 5 and 7, and they've never seen their father take a drink, and I'm very proud of that.
So your message to them, because it sounds like you were a functional alcoholic, did most people in your life know how bad you were?
I think a lot of people knew how bad I was, and I was functioning in a way that I was going to work, and I was, in theory, getting the job done. But I was not functioning in any real way in any part of my life. And I know that there's a lot of people out there in Washington, D.C. or elsewhere who have been through this, who are, have family members who have been through this. And it's a big struggle. And if anybody can take anything from this book and find some things in there that relate to their own lives, then it was worth writing.
Ultimately, you said rehab helped, but the thing that got you to not take another drink was the threat of prison.
Yeah, I woke up in jail one day and I was on probation for two DUIs, my second of two DUIs, and I was facing 3 months in jail if I didn't straighten myself out. And that's what straightened me out. And that was May 16th, 2015, the last day that I picked up a drink. And I ultimately wanted to write it down because I thought, if I can write this and tell my story in such a way, first of all, it takes the power away.
There it is.
People have tried to use my arrest record, and I have a variety of arrests, a couple of DUIs and some other alcohol-related arrests, more minor things. People have tried to use them against me when I worked for President Trump's campaign. People tried to attack me with my record. So if I wrote it myself, well, no one can attack me with those things again. And it might help somebody else along the way.
Might? I'm sure it will. People need to see success stories, and you're one of them. Tim, congratulations.
And so that was it. That was the segment. And I really thank Brian Kilmeade for that. One question that I answered there. We didn't, you know, go through the Q&A during the thing. And so when he asked me, it sounded like I was what people sometimes call a functioning alcoholic. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I answered it the way that I did, because I was functioning and, you know, I'm showing up for work, but I wasn't really I was showing up for work. Sometimes I got fired 3 times from 3 different jobs. I got fired by the Republican Governors Association, where I was the director of political communications. I got fired by Linda McMahon's Senate campaign in Connecticut. And I got fired by George Allen's third Senate race in Virginia in what year would that have been? 2012, maybe something like that. 2012. Yeah, I think that's when it was. So I had worked on his first Senate race in 2000, but in 2012, I got fired like within about 2 weeks of having started because I was drunk all the time. So I was not functioning, wow. Not fun. And I got arrested. I got two DUIs and I got arrested another handful of times for drunk in public and that kind of stuff. Does that sound like somebody who's functioning? No. So I don't know why I answered the question the way that I did, but because that wasn't true.
No, it was a great interview though. And I think Brian was right. He said it might help people. It definitely will. And I think so too. I was telling my mom how I got to read a couple chapters of it before. And just the way you write it is so captivating. It really is a page turner. Even if for someone who is like not super interested in Trump or politics or whatever. All of it is very, it's a great story just to read. It's very interesting. It really keeps your interest for long periods of time. And mine is going to be here tomorrow. So I'm really hoping for a signed copy.
Well, but, I'm sure.
Of course. One thing I want to add.
Your problem is you live in North Carolina. I'm sorry to say. I can mail you.
I know. Yeah. Hey, my mom is actually opening a coffee shop and it's going to be like coffee shop bookstore. She was like, hey, maybe Tim can come have a book signing in the coffee shop.
You bet. I will absolutely do that.
But one thing before we move on past this, I want to, of course, I have to relate this to a spiritual aspect.
Sure.
I truly see like how the Lord took what the enemy meant for evil and turned it for good, because you have this past now that you are able to use to help other people who are going through things like that, who, you know, need someone to relate to, who need someone to say, look, I've been through that. I can tell you it is possible to overcome it. Here's how I did it. And so I just think it's awesome that the Lord is using your story for good.
Well, thank you for saying so. And I appreciate you saying that, that it reads well, that it's entertaining to read. It's kind of the same effect as when traffic slows down to watch an accident that's not actually blocking traffic, but it's just people that, like, an accident is interesting to look at, you know. Yes. train wrecks are often very fascinating, right? I think maybe that's why it's entertaining to read, is because you must be reading it and thinking, my God, what an idiot this guy is.
No. Can I ask you what's the feedback you've gotten from your family since?
Oh, all very positive. You know, my two little boys, they know that daddy wrote a book, and they know that he went to New York to be on TV about it, but they're too young yet to really understand it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as what I said in that interview, I have to have these two little kids, 5 and 7, and they've never seen daddy take a drink. And when they're old enough to get it, I don't know what that age is, but I want them to read it and say, you know, don't be like this guy.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, that's that. If it's able to help anybody, that's really why I wrote it, you know, to be honest with you.
And it's doing great on Amazon right now.
Yeah. It, on release day, which was Tuesday, it really quickly, it shot up to, number one in books about elections, number one in books by political authors, and number one in alcohol, rehabilitation, alcohol recovery. And then overall, and this one was what amazed me, that, you know, and I checked it out. I think Amazon has roughly 7 million titles of books for sale. Ooh. That you can order. 7 million, right? And mine at its peak on release day was ranked 140th out of 7 million. Wow. So that's not bad. And it's hanging on. So it's been 2 days. And that's probably, you know, that was on the strength of the Fox and Friends. Mm-hmm. It's hanging on there. It's still number one in elections, and it's still in the top 10 in the other categories. And so I continue to do a lot of media and a lot of interviews about it. I just talked to an NBC reporter earlier today. You know, you do the friendly ones, but I talk about it in the book. You got to be willing to do the hostile interviews too. And I'm actually emailing, but I don't know if it's going to work out, but I'm emailing back and forth with a producer at CNN. They asked me to come on, and I said, yeah, sure, I'll come on. So I don't know if it's going to happen, but I said, yeah, I'll do it. If you want me, I'll come. So.
Good. You go, Tim. That's what, now I'm in back to like real life mode of that's how you change voters' minds.
Yeah, right. You might as well go on there. And I don't know, who knows? Maybe they want to relitigate 2020 all over again. And if that's the case, then I guess I'll go along with it, but that's not why I'm there. I'm trying to, you know, promote this book that I actually think has a good message. And if they want to relitigate 4 years ago, last election, you know, that's on them, I guess.
Or maybe they'll at least give you like the title of your book in the Chiron.
Yeah. So it is available now for purchase everywhere you can buy books: Amazon, Target, Barnes and Noble, all that stuff. Swing Hard. Let me show it one more time. Swing Hard, In Case You Hit It, My Escape from Addiction, and Shot at Redemption on the Trump Campaign. So that's enough of that, Sonny. Thank you very much for indulging. Yeah. And one more thing I should also say, this is not a tell-all book like a lot of the books in the Trump era, working for President Trump on his reelection campaign in 2020 and being the communications director is the highest honor of my professional career. And I strongly support him again for president in 2024, this go round once more. So this is in no way, if you're looking for gossip and salacious stories and things that are screaming criticisms about Donald Trump, you're not going to find it in my book.
So, this ain't it.
This ain't it. This ain't for you if that's what you're looking for. So let's move on. A lot of the stuff that's in my book, I focus a lot, as you might imagine, since I was a communications director, on my interactions with the news media. And boy, they have really been performing over the course of the last couple weeks, have they not?
That's a nice way to put it, Tim. That's very kind of you. Gracious.
Well, thanks. So on the campaign trail, Donald Trump is out there, and there's been a spate of violent crimes committed by illegal aliens, and a lot of them are in the country and have been deported one time, let's say deported under Donald Trump, for example, or at least deported earlier, and then they've come back in illegally under Joe Biden and his lax enforcement policies. In some cases, some of these people have been deported and returned several times prior to the Trump years. And then Biden, of course, his open borders thing is well documented and terrible. And so President Trump went to Michigan the other day, which was the location of one of these murders, where a woman was murdered by an illegal alien. And he had this to say at the press conference.
The 22-year-old nursing student in Georgia who was barbarically murdered by an illegal alien animal. The Democrats say, please don't call them animals. They're humans. I said, no, they're not humans. They're not humans. They're animals.
Okay. In that case, he was talking about Laken Riley, who's the young lady from Georgia who was murdered by a different illegal alien. And did you follow all that? Did you see all that stuff?
Oh, yeah.
In your mind, who's Donald Trump talking about there?
He's talking about her murderer and the others who are violent criminals that are just committing these heinous acts across our country. He is not talking about regular immigrants who are coming here for a better life.
He is not. I mean, isn't it? How many times would you have to watch that thing before your eyes would glaze over and your ears would shut down and you could somehow mistake it for him talking about all immigrants?
Tim,
how do you do that? How do you watch that clip and say, oh, he's talking about everybody?
I think you just have to have such a deep burning hatred for him that no matter what he says, you're going to twist it to fit your narrative of how much you hate him. But I don't know if you have a clip of this, but Wolf Blitzer, did you see?
Oh, yeah, I have that.
Okay, go ahead.
So hold on. So here we go. It's only 14 seconds. Let's play Trump again.
The 22-year-old nursing student in Georgia who was barbarically murdered by an illegal alien animal. The Democrats say, please don't call them animals. They're humans. I said, no, they're not humans. They're not humans. They're animals.
Yeah. No doubt he's talking about violence. So here he is, Wolf Blitzer on CNN, and he's got Ken Jennings on there with him, who's one of the Republican CNN contributors. And Jennings God bless Wolf Blitzer. What does he even think? I don't even know. Is Wolf even aware? Let's just play it.
But when he says these immigrants are animals, they're not humans, what does that suggest? I mean, isn't that brutal? Shouldn't people be condemning that?
I listened to the entire tape. He was specifically talking about the person who murdered Laken Riley in Georgia. And to be honest with you, Wolf, if somebody murders another human being, I think they deserve to be called animals. And I don't think any American is really going to reject that kind of rhetoric. That poor girl was murdered in cold blood. Is that person who did it not an animal? I think that's an apt term.
So you think he was only referring to those murderers, not referring in general to illegal immigrants who are coming into the United States?
I listened to the tape. That's exactly what he was talking about, in my opinion.
Yep. There's no doubt. And Wolf is like,
it's not even an opinion. I mean, that was great and a good response, but it's not an opinion. He said he's talking about the violent criminals that are coming across our border and committing horrible acts against our citizens. And I do question, did Wolf even watch the whole tape?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
That like 15-second clip, could he not manage to watch that enough, or did he just take his producer's word for it? The fact that this, you know, we saw them run with Bloodbath, which was just, you know, give me a break. Yeah. But this, seriously? I mean, I don't even know how you can take this out of context when he is saying violent criminals who murdered our citizens.
Yeah.
Unreal.
It's pretty. I think probably I'm just a straight up guess, but like you were just alluding to, I'll bet Wolf hadn't seen the clip, or if he did, he only saw just the part where Trump says the animals part and they leave out the context. And, you know, he doesn't, these hosts don't script the shows by themselves. They have producers who prompt them with all the questions and bullet points and talking points and stuff. And I doubt he actually saw the tape, but if the issue would be, for the sake of it, let's say that there is the benefit of the doubt, and it's possible that Wolf at CNN or his producers just misinterpreted what Trump said. That's possible, right? Would it then fall? Is it possible that every single reporter also misinterpreted it the same way? Every single one of them? Is that possible? What do you think?
No, like I said earlier, they have an agenda. They have a set agenda in their mind. They're waiting for the slightest word that they could use against him. They're hanging on to every breath that maybe he breathes wrong and they can turn it into something absolutely asinine. But yeah, no, it's insane. And I think, Jesse Kelly Hannity last night had a good, compilation of this where he played Wolf and then he played the whole clip and, there's no way you can look at that with an objective mind and still think that he's talking about immigrants who are coming here for all the right reasons. But right. Yet these outlets still continue to push this narrative. It's like, come That's on, so funny. Find something else to talk about.
It's just like the bloodbath thing. And, and you, here's the thing, I think, and I'm just guessing here again, because you don't know what Trump is thinking about, but just watching that clip, this is not the first time where he's said animals in relation to illegal aliens and violent criminals and rapists and murderers and such. And the media has dishonestly said that he's talking about all immigrants. It's happened before. It happened in his announcement, his kickoff speech in 2015, right? Way back then, that's when it happened. I think it's obvious to me that he knows that when he says animals, that this is what the media is going to do. And he says it on purpose. That's just like he was also in that same speech talked about bloodbath, Biden's border bloodbath, because he knows, oh, the media went nuts about bloodbath. So I'm going to say it again. Yeah. And in this game, he did it. And so listen, if you do a simple Google search, here's the Google search, just go to the Google box and search for, I'm showing it to the screen there, these three simple words, Trump, migrant, animals. Okay. Wow. Just those three words, Trump, migrant, animals, and then click the little thing that says news, and that'll give you all the recent news articles that contain those three words. And here you go. Here's some headlines. You ready? And we've already seen what he actually said. Reuters. Trump calls migrants animals, intensifying focus on illegal immigration. New York Times. Trump again invokes bloodbath and dehumanizes migrants in border remarks. See, oh, you're not allowed to say mean things about murderers.
Dehumanizes. But right. These murderers who are doing this are not dehumanizing their victims.
How about they're unhumanizing them? They're no longer humans. They're dead.
How are we in a place in our society where the media hates Donald Trump so much that they are willing to turn and defend murderers?
Yeah.
And
they're
rapists,
taking the side. There's the no worst, they are yes, they're taking the side of these murderers. Yes.
Worst people in our world. They are going to choose their side and defend them over Donald Trump. And I truly hope that voters, independent voters, that suburban women, everyone whose vote, you know, we are really relying on this go around, sees this just absolute insanity that's coming from the left.
Yep. And it goes on. You want some more?
Yes. Sorry. Go ahead.
As we get deeper into the fever pitch leftist media here, Rolling Stone. Always dependable for an even-headed take on what's going on here. Trump escalates his dehumanization of migrants. Some are not people. These are animals, he says. Forbes, this is a good one. An even darker Trump warns of bloodbath if not elected and calls some migrants animals.
Oh, what is even darker Trump? Is that what you said?
It's an even darker.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah. So.
It's a unique headline.
They've had their hair on fire about Donald Trump for since 2015, 9 years now, since 2015. Wow. But now all of a sudden, oh my gosh, it's Trump, darker than you've ever seen. Oh my God. I mean, I just don't understand. Maybe they think that they look at each other and their competition and all these different outlets, and they say, well, they're doing it, we've got to do it. But honest to God, who takes them seriously? Everyone can see the lies. These aren't exaggerations. These aren't misinterpretations. They're lies.
They're straight up lies.
You're presenting it as though Donald Trump said something that he did not say. And they keep doing it over and over. They never, ever learn their lesson. Their approval rating is, like, if you look at the Pew polls, Pew Charitable Trust or Pew opinion polling, you know, the media gets an approval rating of about 15, something like that. And I think they're going for a new record low, you know?
I think so. But Tim, think about the battle that we face here. Let's pretend I am a suburban woman who only watches CNN in the morning. I only get my news maybe from Facebook. And that's what I see on my TV, on my phone, on my computer. I only see these bad representations of the president. And when I get on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, all I'm seeing is bad stuff about him because big tech controls an algorithm that tells me, you know, what I need to think. So it's just such an uphill battle because people who are not expanding their knowledge or their research into candidates, when everything is controlled by such a select group of people, it's a battle. And I hope that's something that we're able to break through.
It is a battle to break through. I mean, I don't know. I honestly say this sometimes to Fran. I probably said it to you, and just I'm joking, but when you deal with a media that is like this, I mean, I think to myself, my God, how do Republicans ever win elections anywhere? You know, not just presidential. Yeah.
Yeah.
When this is what we have to fight, you know?
Yeah.
And I just don't get it. I really don't. And then, you know, the media gets all hot and bothered when you call them on it and criticize them. Like, they believe that because, the Constitution, the First Amendment specifically, carves out free speech and says the Congress and the government can't interfere with free speech and the free press, that gives them the license to be able to say whatever they want and also escape criticism. Like, they're the only ones who have First Amendment rights. I have a First Amendment right to criticize them all day long. I write a column about it every 2 weeks in the Washington Times. You know, probably 15-20% of my book is complaints about different things that the media did. I have a First Amendment too, fellas. So,
well, these and ladies. Are the same people that were, you know, losing their mind back when COVID was at its peak and people were questioning the vaccine and maybe some of the side effects. Same people losing their mind over misinformation. They just want to control what the speech that they have, that everyone's allowed to have. They want to be in control. It's all about power, power and submission.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. So we'll see. I don't know if I'm going to go on CNN tonight or not.
Oh, it's tonight.
It would be. Could be. Possibly. Well, I mean, like, if this is a taped podcast, so I shouldn't say tonight, right? So I don't know. But as we tape this, it's Thursday, April 4th, year of our Lord, 2024. So I don't know. I don't know if we're going to work it out or not.
Well, we'll be on the lookout.
So we'll see. We'll see. And I think, unless it falls through, I think I'm doing Chris Cuomo's show on News Nation on Friday night.
Oh, okay.
So if anybody is watching or listening to this before 8 p.m. on Friday, April 5th, I am at this moment anyway scheduled to be on Chris Cuomo's show. So we'll see how that goes. As you may remember, I had a little bit of a testy exchange with Cuomo. I say nice things about him in my book because I think he gets it. He understands everybody's role. He gets it.
That's the clip you should have played on today's podcast.
Oh, no. I don't want to pick on Chris Cuomo anymore. I like him. I do. Oh, I actually do. Yeah,
that's nice of you. Okay.
What are you going to do? What are you doing?
No, sorry.
Are you sending a text? Look at you, multitasking.
Yeah, multitasking.
So last topic, because we're, the time is passing quickly once again.
It's because we have so much fun together, Tim.
I know it. Know it. We do. Who needs Hogan?
I know.
You know?
Hogan.
So you wanted to talk about this, speaking of illegal immigrants, this phenomenon of squatters all over the place. What, tell me what you know about this and why is it, I'm guessing that you're against it.
I can say I'm against it. Tim, I hope you are as well. No, I've just all of a sudden, I'm sure as you've seen watching the news, this is like really taken up a lot of coverage. All these stories of squatters going in. And I mean, we've seen it in New York. We've seen it in, I think, Florida and Texas, pretty much all the states across the spectrum of Republican, Democrat. They're all dealing with some issue of squatters. And as I just watch these news, like packages and everything, my mind is blown, completely blown, that squatters' rights is even a term. How?
And these are illegal immigrants, yeah? Most of them.
A lot of them, yes. Who are
the ones, this new wave of stuff.
Right, yeah, what all the coverage is on right now. Illegal immigrants coming in and just living in your house. And I've seen a couple of places where the rightful homeowner has been taken away in handcuffs. Over this.
Yeah.
Tim, imagine coming home into your new house and there's someone else living there and you're the one that gets arrested. In the same way that our lovely media likes to choose the side of the violent, illegal immigrant criminals, we're also choosing them and letting them live in our homes for free while we pay the bills. They're causing damage. All of this is just absolutely mind-blowing. Like, what are we living in?
Yeah. Oh, I know. And our good friends at the Washington Post have a take on this. Check this out. Have you seen this headline?
No,
squatters, I haven't. Squatters have become a right-wing talking point. What to know about the rare practice? Okay, you got that? Squatters
rare.
Have become a right-wing talking point. What to know about the rare practice? So here's what the fine people at the Washington Post want everyone to know about. First of all, squatters, this whole thing about people squatting in your house, it basically never happens is what they want you to think, right? It basically doesn't happen. And also it's just a bunch of right wingers talking about this. So you can safely disregard this. That's what they're saying.
That's until it happens to you, right?
Right. Until it happens to you. Sure. But are you kidding me? So the media is like, the Washington Post's approach to this is that it doesn't happen very much, and it's just a bunch of Republicans, so let's not even worry about it, right? It's
pesky Republicans.
Right, but they are forever pulling out the behavior of one individual Republican who has done something either unfortunate or embarrassing or bad or whatever, and broadening that out and labeling all Republicans as being guilty of the crime of this one person, as though we're all responsible. How many, I can tell you, from the time when I worked on Capitol Hill to every campaign I've ever worked on, if a Republican somewhere in the country does something that offends the media, every other Republican in the country is going to be asked whether or not he or she disagrees with it. Right.
Yeah,
it's always like a little bit, you know, the Manu Raju from CNN has made a whole career out of this thing. He chases Republicans up and down the halls of Congress, asking them if they're willing to condemn other Republicans for having said or done something that Manu finds objectionable, right? But when you have people actually illegally present in this country, invading someone's home and refusing to leave, Washington Post is going to say, man, it doesn't really happen. And also it's just Republicans who care about that. So
it's like, it's the same thing that they do with the Biden economy right now. They write all these pieces about, oh, actually the economy is great. Like, they're asking you to believe things that you're seeing with your own eyes. Oh, gas is $4 a gallon. It's actually not that bad. Don't worry about it. When you are literally seeing and feeling something completely different, they're telling you not to believe it. And I can't.
Yeah.
My mind is just like blown that this is even happening.
They also, like when you're talking about inflation, for example, they play word games. And they try to slip things past people because, you know, your typical reader of a newspaper, or if you're listening to a TV or radio broadcast, you might not really understand the full context of things. When it comes to inflation, and let's say, not sped up again, but let's say it was a few months ago when the rate of inflation did actually slow down. They talked, and Paul Krugman, the columnist, and somehow he won a Nobel Prize in economics, but he writes in a column and he says, we have won the battle. The battle over inflation is over. The battle we have won. It is over. And then he writes stories about, you know, inflation has slowed. It has stopped. It has basically stopped. No more inflation. Stopped in its tracks. And that implies that prices have gone back down. But they have not. They're talking about they've slowed down the skyrocket. They're still going up, but the speed of going. And so they're still at the level, like if it started at the beginning of the Biden administration, it started at, let's say, zero. This is not the rate of inflation, but just say on a scale of 0 to 10, prices started at zero. Let's start that as the baseline for Biden. Then they went up to 7. And then they're slowly getting up to 8. They're not going back down again. They're just reaching 8 a little slower than they reached 7. That's what's happening. But the media wants to convince people that inflation is gone. When the first time you go buy a gallon of milk, you'll figure out that it ain't gone.
I was going to say my weekly grocery bill stands to differ on that statement. It is absolutely unheard of. And not even just the groceries that are so crazy and gas and everything, but my power bill has gone up by like $100 every month. And I don't know, I'm not doing anything different than I was.
I think that you're sure Isaiah's not staying up late watching TV and stuff.
He might be, actually, now that he's a big boy now. You could probably hear him screaming in the background.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, that's the joys of motherhood.
Mm-hmm. Well, good old Isaiah. It's astounding. Our good friend Abby Jackson, formerly of the Trump campaign, now doing great work in the Senate. She posted a picture of a sign in the window of a Subway, you know, the sandwich shop, the sandwich chain Subway. And it was 6-inch subs, $6. Yeah. Right. 6-inch for $6. Do you remember how long ago was the $5 foot long? It wasn't very long ago. So you get a foot long Subway for $5. You can't do that anymore. Now you're getting half of it for $6.
Oh,
So that's more than double. That means, so if you get 2 6-inch ones, which makes a foot, it will cost you $12, right? 2 times $6.
Yeah.
The old foot long, like yesterday.
$5.
That's more than double.
Yeah.
That's 140% increase. I just did that math off the top of my head. I think it's right. But
that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So anyway, that's talking about, that's more onto, and then the media is going to try to say, oh, nah, the battle with inflation is done. It's over.
Yeah.
Also, the jobs numbers are great. There are no squatters. Yeah, everybody is fantastic. Everything is great. Yeah. If you can't feel it, you're just, it's the right wing talking points. That's all.
The jobs numbers are so good, mostly because people have had to get a second job to pay for how expensive everything is. But disregard that.
And how about, the fact checkers, you know how the fact checkers were in 2020. They just went nuts. They would, honest to God, do you remember when they used to fact check jokes that Donald Trump told? Right. Seriously, he would be at a rally and he would get up there and he would tell a joke and they would fact check it and fact check the premise of the joke. And then somewhere along the way, we acknowledge that it is possible that the president was joking. What is wrong with you? There's numbers. Biden claims, not that I get worked up about this or anything.
Clearly. Hunter Biden's laptop.
Yeah. Well, don't. You shouldn't have said that. But like talking about the jobs numbers, Biden brags about how many millions of jobs he's created. And you talk about context, that's out of context. Biden himself is inserting that stat out of context. Mm-hmm. How about the idea that when you became president, we were just emerging from a global pandemic where the entire economy, the world's economy, the shipping, everything. Do you remember how disrupted everything was? Businesses closed. We weren't allowed to go to work. Of course, businesses closed. Restaurants closed, lost forever. There are tens of thousands of restaurants and stores and shops and stuff that are never going to open again because they couldn't survive being closed for that long during the pandemic. And then when the economy reopens, naturally, jobs return. When you're allowed to go to work, miraculously, there are jobs.
Yeah.
The economy begins to recover, and Biden's going to claim credit for that. We were in the biggest economic hole of 150 years because of a virus that came from China and affected the whole world. And Biden is going to claim credit for the world recovering from that.
It shouldn't surprise you though, because that's just what this administration does.
But that's where the media should step in and say, well, you know, actually, which is what they do for Trump. Actually.
There is no accountability there.
No,
not at all.
I swear, I should pick a different line of work. This is too, it's too frustrating.
I understand. Yeah. It's okay, Tim. We are fighting the good fight. That's what we have to keep doing.
That's true. Well, and I think probably, do you want to wrap or are you going to go?
Yeah. No, we're good. I was going to say, and you got to sell books. So
I do have to sell books. I have two boys who need to go to college.
Yep.
You know, so thanks, Sonny, for your time. Sorry that Hogan couldn't have been with us. I think he's traveling on the road for AFPI or I don't wonder if one of his many endeavors, whatever else it is that he's doing. So thank you, Sonny. It's good to see you once again. Yes. Thank your mother for buying two copies of my book. I greatly, very much appreciate it. And this is it. I wish all of our listeners and viewers would buy it as well. Swing Hard, In Case You Hit It. Available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, all the other things. Any online retailer you can find, they probably have it. So I appreciate it, Sonny. Good to see you. We will talk again soon. I'm Tim Murtaugh. This has been the Line Drive Podcast.